Hear what you have to say.
Hi, everybody. Your internet connection is unstable, is what it says here. Other connections that are less stable. Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jennifer.
For those of you who I haven't met before at this meeting, my sobriety date is May 4th, 1991. My home group is God Calling, which is on Friday nights at 7 o'clock at Kingsley United Methodist Church. And you're all invited. It's an 11-step meditation meeting. It's a small group. It's really a nice place to go when you want kind of an intimate discussion meeting. I'm not an expert on the steps. I, you know, just followed the instructions of my sponsor when I first did these steps and continued to learn from the books and the literature of AA about them, and that's, I'll just share with you what I learned and what I did. Last week, we left off, we had made a decision in step three to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And the book says that though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a serious effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. So we had, you know, we take a personal inventory. That's what to do next. I had never done that. I had taken your inventory many times. And I was really good at it. So step four says we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Okay, so that was going to be new for me. My sponsor, Ann, my first sponsor, brought me to this step probably when I was about 6 months. I probably got to this step four to six months into the rooms. She didn't see any reason to let me suffer any longer. And I was anxious to do this step because I really wanted her to know about all the terrible things people had done to me. And I thought that's what this was. So what she said to me was, this is not an immoral inventory. This is a moral inventory. This is not a list of all the terrible things you have done or terrible things other people have done to you. What we're trying to find out with this step is why I did the things I did that hurt me and the people around me. Because I had lived without, for years in my drinking, without giving my behavior a second thought. I was just kind of acting on impulse, you know, trying to get to the next feeling good experience. So I didn't evaluate why I was doing what I was doing or what was driving my behavior or my actions, and my thoughts even were unhealthy. And I didn't really look at what was driving that. And that's what we're going to do here in step four. We're going to find out why we did the things we did that hurt other people and hurt us so badly that we ended up here, you know, together, which actually is a gift. But we didn't know it back at step four. My sponsor told me to follow the steps as they're written in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what I did, and that's what I teach to people that I sponsor. There are, on page 65 of the Big Book, a clear-cut outline of how to do this. Now, the important thing to remember is this step, we're really into action now. We're putting this all on paper. We're writing this down. Because when we get to the next step, and we're going to talk about that, we need to have something in front of us to refer to. We need to have something to look at about ourselves. So there is an outline on page 65, and they start with three columns. And in the beginning of my examination of myself, I had to look at what was blocking me. What was blocking me from being happy? What was blocking me from having good relationships with people? What kinds of things were stopping me? Well, They talk in the book about resentments being the number one offender, how dangerous they are for us, how they can kill us, you know, anger not being an option for us. My sponsor taught me that anger is just fear demonstrated. So really, what I was looking for was the fear underneath the behavior that I had. So we have these three columns for resentments. Who I'm resentful at, what they did. Boy, I could tell you all about what they did. And you know, this fellow in the big book, he tells you what the, you know. This guy, this Mr. Brown told his wife about his mistress. That's a terrible thing to do. How dare he? And then we have another column that we talk about what part of our lives that this affects. Does it affect our security? Does it affect our personal relationships, including sex? Does it affect our ambitions or our self-esteem? And we listed that in the third column. So that's what I did. It says we went back through our lives, which means I started here and I went back through my life. And boy, I had a lot to write down. Because there were a lot of people, like he writes in the big book, Mrs. Jones, she's a nut. I had a lot of people in my life like that. I needed to write that down. That affected, my personal relationships. So I wrote down those resentments. And I had been angry for a long time. I didn't really know that until I started putting those things down on paper. And boy, I could not wait to tell my sponsor about how awful all these people had been to me. And that's why I was in the situation I was in. But then she told me, continue to read the chapter. So it says, okay. Because to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. That was me. You were wrong. I was a victim. That's where I was. That's where I lived. But then I had to keep reading, see. And it says, we turned back to the list. Okay, now we're looking at it for a second time. I got my list, all these people I resent. I had to look at it again. I had to see that the world and its people were often quite wrong and that they might be spiritually sick, like me. Oh, okay. Well, so I had to maybe cut them a break because they weren't healthy, and here I was not that healthy either. And so, though we didn't like their symptoms, the book says, and these disturbed us, they were sick people, and we asked God to show them the same patience and tolerance that we wanted to be shown ourselves. And there's a prayer that goes with this second looking at our resentment list. It says, we say, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him or her? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Huh. Okay, so now I'm looking at the resentment I had toward my father, who was a drunk for the first 12 years of my life, left and disappeared for 2 years, and then got sober when I was 15, and I'm saying, this was a sick man. I actually knew that when I was a little kid. I knew he was a sick man. I never thought about praying for him. That didn't come up. It was easier to be mad. So this kind of, loosened me up. It kind of made me start to see people in a different light. Then we have to look at the list again, if I keep reading. Now we're going to look at the list again, and we're going to disregard that my dad was a drunk. We're going to disregard what he did. And we're going to look at the fact that I haven't called him in 3 years. So I don't know what kind of relationship we could have now that he's sober, because that's my part. I'm being the victim and I'm being inconsiderate. I'm not being a good daughter. I'm not even showing any kind of caring. That's my part. So we have another column. And that's my part. So that's the fourth column. At least that's what I suggest to the people I sponsor. I need to see my part. And in almost every situation, and it goes back to something we read earlier, I had gone through my life making decisions based on self, which later put me in a position to be hurt. Remember we talked about that? and I got hurt. And this list of resentments that I got to write, those were all the people that hurt me. But when I looked at this for the third time, at my part, then I began to see that I had made decisions based on self, which put me in that position. I add a fifth column. This is, I don't know if other people do this, I do this with women I sponsor, of the defect of character that is operative in that situation. That's just me. I do it for myself. I suggest it to the women I sponsor. That way, when we get to the end of this, and we're not at the end of it yet, I know going into the later steps what my defects of character are. And usually, you know, they're the seven deadly sins are one group of behaviors that I refer to sometimes as defects of character. I use those. They're used in the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book. That is a good addendum, you know, for these steps if you want to add a little more insight. So, we noticed the word fear came up a lot. When you look in your big book and you look at your at the chart, fear came up a lot. Fear, you know, was at the root of really everything for me. So we reviewed our fears thoroughly. And again, this is the next part of step four. We write down all the fears, make a list of our fears. And boy, I had a lot of fears. And they were big fears. They were like fears of being alone, fear of abandonment, big fears that I had had for a long time. Let's put those all on paper, okay? And there's a prayer that goes with this too. Right here in the big book, it says, instead we ask God, we never apologize for God, there's a lot more to it, but instead we let God demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Like, how easy was that? You know, I'd carried these fears for 33 years. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. All I had to do was identify them and pray for them. I remember doing my fifth step on the fear list, and I did it, you know, I did fourth and fifth step several times thoroughly. And I remember when I did this step, this part of the step with Jim Nelson, who was one of my spiritual guides. And I went through those fears, and most of them were absolutely moot points. They weren't even relevant anymore. I had carried them from childhood, you know, and as an adult, they didn't have even any impact on my life. They just fell away then. So that's part two of step four, the list of fears that is also on paper. Then we move on to our sex conduct. Everybody likes this part of it. And this what we're really talking about here is behavior in sex relationships where there's no resentment attached, but where we might have injured somebody. And we kind of take a look at that. We also put that on paper. You know, what injury we caused and to who, and what we could have maybe done better or should do better. And of course, there's a prayer that goes with that too. After we get that all on paper, and we review, you know, go through our lives and review those relationships. You know, why didn't they work? Why, what did I do to hurt somebody? What was my behavior? What was my part? And in meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. That's a prayer. The right answer will come if we ask for it. So to sum up about sex, what they say is we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. You know, it all takes time, you know, but these prayers over time start to take hold if we continue to move forward. So that's step four. Now we're going to see if I can keep this from falling over. All right. Now we have our list. Probably have a whole lot written down. I did. I wrote a book. You know, because all those resentments and all the things everybody did to hurt me. So what am I going to do with the list? Well, it tells me in step 5 that I'm going to share this with myself, with God, with myself, and with another human being. Why do I have to share it with somebody else? I looked at it 3 times. I found out all this information about myself. I'm good now, thank you. I shouldn't have to share this with another human being. Of course, I was eager at the first time I did this step because I really wanted to tell my sponsor exactly all these things that people had done to me, and she just swung me right back around to look at that list again and again, and yeah, that worked out okay. So why? Why do we need to do this step? And the book says that a self-appraisal is rarely adequate. You know, I'm going to lie to myself. I was lying to myself. There's no question about it. I remember. You know, I was with Beverly. The snow was coming down. We were in their house in Fairview, which wasn't even completely built at the time. So we were sitting around like this wood-burning fireplace, and there's, you know, 2 feet of snow coming down outside. And I'm telling her just how bad everybody was to me. And she's just, you know, bringing me full circle around and saying, you know, your dad was sick. And he's doing better now. And, you know, why didn't you call him for Christmas or send a Christmas card? You know, why'd you break up with that guy? You know, because he went on a trip to Europe and you didn't want to wait. Maybe that was you and not him. So she helped me to see my part. And that's, you know, having the right person is just everything in step 5. You know, I had great sponsors. I have been so blessed with sponsors in this program. Beverly was not my sponsor when I did my first fifth step. But I did it with her anyway because I trusted her, I knew her, I loved my sponsor, I loved Ann, but Ann had a certain belief system that I thought might just be a little uncomfortable for me to talk about some things. And that's okay. It's okay. You don't have to do your fifth step with your sponsor. But you do have to, or we have to, or I had to, do it with somebody who understood what I was trying to do. Because there are people, and the book talks about this, who don't understand alcoholics. And it could really be injurious, I think, to do a fifth step, to share all that information with someone who really doesn't understand what we're getting at. Especially, you know, if there's things in your story that you're really concerned about. And you also want to make sure that you choose somebody who's trustworthy. Because this is your stuff. And, you know, as a sponsor and with a sponsor, confidentiality is really everything, especially in this stuff, really important. So, you know, it's good to take the time and pray about it before you choose someone to do that step with. The other reason why, because we said, why do I have to do this? Why is because probably you'll get drunk if you don't. It's, you know, they'd say, it's true. They say we're as sick as our secrets. And that really there needs to be somebody who knows all of our life story. I have a person on the planet who knows all of my life story. Knows things nobody else knows. I had a person in Jim Nelson who knew. And now my present sponsor knows all of my life story. There is a comfort in that. For me, because she loves me anyway. She knows it all, and she loves me. Jim Nelson knew it all, and he loved me. He was my dear friend. So, we get into action, and we do that step, and I'm going to read to you from the book what it says to do. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone with perfect peace and ease, which I could never do before that. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, 1 hour. Carefully reviewing what we've done, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. Okay. Your turn.
Thank you, Jennifer. So now we'd like to invite the audience to ask any questions that they have. So if you're here in the rooms, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll get you the microphone. Or if you're on Zoom, feel free to go ahead and speak up whenever you have the opportunity.
Hi, Jennifer. My name is John and I'm an alcoholic. That was the clearest and most concise explanation of the fourth and fifth steps that I've ever heard.
Wow.
My question is, you said that you did the fourth step originally and the fifth step very closely after that, after about 6 months of sobriety and being in the program. Did you have all these insights after 6 months?
No.
I mean, could you tell me a little bit about the I mean, you're, in my opinion, this was very insightful, and it there was a tremendous amount of wisdom that you had imparted there, and you even touched on many of the fears that many of us, including I, have in regard to confidentiality, etc. But, I mean, did that all come to you like the first time you went through this, is my question?
No. I've done this a few times now, so it's clearer for me. And I've taught it a few times, or a dozen times. At first, like I said, I really thought this was about telling somebody all the terrible things that had happened to me, because I thought like a victim. So the first time I did this, and that would be the 6 months time, that's how I approached it, and that was with Beverly, who a lot of you know. Because I didn't even trust my own sponsor would understand, you know, what a foul human being I was, and I wanted somebody that I could convince that I had been the victim of these other people. So she was Terry's sponsor, and, you know, Terry said, she's great, you know, you're going to love it, do it with her. So I did, you know. And she is great, and she was incredibly helpful, and she was so gentle in turning things around so that I could start to see me and my part, which I had to do. I had to start to see why I was doing what I was doing that was causing injury to myself and to the people around me. Because until I could do that, I couldn't change anything. You know, as long as I saw myself as a victim, I was trapped, I was stuck. I couldn't change anything, because if I'm your victim, then you have the power and I don't have any power. It was a comfortable place to be for 33 years, but after 33 years, it wasn't working anymore. So in this step is where I learned, you know, to turn it around. But it was a slow process. I did this step thoroughly, you know, start to finish, once in the first year and once in the second year, and they were thorough inventories. And I did continue the rest of the steps after the first time and after the second time, because I found so much more. Now, over the years, I've done many inventories. They aren't, you know, my entire life anymore, there are usually facets of my life or relationships that kind of got left out somewhere along the line because I didn't remember everything right away when I came in. You know, and honesty comes in degrees, my sponsor used to say. I wasn't able to be completely honest for a long time. I don't know if, does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Hi, Jennifer. Brenda.
Hey, Brenda.
So, something that you said has me very confused. Something about when you're younger or a kid or whatever, that some of those things you find out were irrelevant was the word you used.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that I'm not sure I understand that because a lot of things happened as a child that were very relevant in my whole life. And I was a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm confused as to why that should be irrelevant when really it just destroyed most of my life until I got into adulthood. So I'm a little confused about being irrelevant or...
I understand what you're asking.
Okay.
What happened to me as a child was not irrelevant at all. It's taken me years and years and years to go back and clear up a lot of things that happened. I had fears that I didn't even know I had until they resurfaced in different situations. I couldn't understand why when my 16-year-old son walked out the door to go wherever he was going to go, I got like a knot in my chest that was terror. I mean, it didn't make sense. He was, you know, a kid. He lived, you know, going to see friends down the street probably. I don't know. But that's what happened. So I had a lot of work to do to go back and find out where that terror started, and it started when I was like 3 years old. I found it, I did the work on it, and it released me from it. What I was talking about when I said the fears were irrelevant was the list of fears that I had. Some of them, like fear of being alone. Well, I'm never going to be alone again, and neither are you. So when I say they fell away because they just weren't relevant, that's what I meant. They weren't present issues in my life anymore. Some of them still were, and some came back in another form, you know, when my life changed in these past 30 years. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Jim. I've been waiting. It's been
a You've been waiting for me to ask
a
question.
I have, yeah.
Jim Nelson would be proud of you.
Thank you. He was a wonderful person. You know that.
And you sound a lot like him.
Wow.
Compared to when you first came in the program. He was a very... whoever he hung around with, they always got smarter. Did you notice that?
I did.
Yes. And he was very knowledgeable about the steps, the traditions, and all those things. He was like a walking library, you know. And everybody liked to sit down and talk to him. And I feel that he passed a lot of that on to you, because when I hear you speak, it's like hearing him again. I could tell you the seat he sat in.
Oh, I can tell you the seat he sat in, too, because I sat next to him. You remember
right,
that.
Right. My question is, on your fifth step, I know when I was done with my first fifth step and I had it all written down, and when I got to the end of it and my sponsor and I were finished, he took it from me and he said, I'm going to burn this because now we're going to start a new chapter in your life. Is that what happened to you?
Yes.
It did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I wanted
to know.
That's
what I do with the women I sponsor too. We have a ceremonial burning, because these, you know, what we write down are really intimate details of our lives. They're for only the person that we do the fifth step with, for their ears only. It's not something I, you know, want laying around my house. I have known people, I have known women who, you know, put their fourth step inventory under the bed and it gets discovered and it's not good, you know. So, yeah, we burn it for that reason, for the reason that you said, Jim, you know, because we're moving forward now. We don't have to carry all that stuff anymore. And also, for confidentiality, I don't want everybody to be reading my fifth step or my fourth step ever, actually. So.
Who else has a question for Jennifer? Anyone on Zoom?
Helen, you must. Oh, there you go. Hi.
So,
there you go.
If you have somebody that is just dragging their feet on step four for whatever reason, I mean, how much part do I, as a sponsor, have to play in that? How much of a role do I have? I tried so many different things, and you know, and it's, I guess at the end, I end up saying, you know, it's, you know, how good do you want to feel, and how happy do you want to be? It's, you know, it's your program, not mine. I just wonder, but I want to encourage. You know, I don't want to just finally crush it and say, you know, it's up to you. If you don't want to move forward, don't move forward. I still want to be supportive. Any thoughts, ideas?
Yeah.
Did everybody hear that?
Did you all hear what Jim asked?
Could you just kind of paraphrase it back, maybe?
Okay. He asked if when I'm sponsoring someone and they just are not getting through the fourth step, they don't, you know, they seem to be dragging their feet, what kind of action do I take that isn't discouraging to them but also gets them to move on the step? I remember the first person I sponsored said she wasn't going to do the fourth step. And I was like, okay, this is, I don't know what to do here. She just said, I'm just not going to do it. And so I talked to Jim Nelson, and he said, you have to let her go. You have to let her go. She won't do it. I mean, you don't have anything else to teach her. This is all you have. This is what you have. She did end up doing it. She's still sober today somewhere. I don't sponsor her anymore, but I did for many years. What I usually do, Jim, is set a date. First of all, everybody's different, and some people are dragging their feet for a different reason than somebody else. Some people are really time challenged. You know, maybe they have five kids and a full-time job, and you know, I'm not gonna, you know, say you know, let's have this done by the weekend, because they may not be able to do that time-wise. But if someone's really dragging their feet just because they're fearful or hesitant, we usually set a deadline. And it's a reasonable deadline, you know, like 2 or 3 weeks from now, after they've had already 2 or 3 weeks, you know. 2 or 3 weeks, and on this date, and we, you know, mark it on a calendar, you know, because I needed clear-cut directions. I try to offer clear-cut directions. It was much easier for me when someone said, I will pick you up at 11 o'clock, than when someone said, I will pick you up sometime in the morning, because I'd spend the whole morning trying to figure out what time they'd be there, you know? So I try to offer a clear-cut instruction, and so we circle a date on the calendar, and they get there or they don't. And that's the part we can't control. We can just pray for them.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Who else has a question for Jennifer?
Hi, Jennifer. Jack, alcoholic.
Hey, Jack.
Thanks again. You're doing great. That's very, very informative. I think when you were talking about the sex inventory, you said something like part of it might be part of the inventory might be, you know, what would you do differently?
Right.
What might you do differently?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've heard it suggested that would be, might be a good question to ask on some of the other parts of the inventory too, like when you know your fears or your resentments. I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Sure. I mean, we That's a good idea across the board for everything. I don't know about the fears, you know, they just were there, and but with the resentments, perhaps, you know, the whole point is to see it in a, see those resentments in a different way. I don't know if they definitely, or my resentments definitely showed an action that I could change. I think the sex conduct does. You know, when we list those don't have resentments. They're just things that we did that hurt people. I guess many of the things we did in resentments hurt people also. So yeah, that's of course always a good question. What could I have done differently? That's really what we need to ask ourselves all the way through the rest of our lives. If we, you know, Jim Nelson taught me we don't hurt people anymore, so I try not to be in that situation too often.
Anymore.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Who else has a question?
Hi, Jennifer. I'm Bridget. I'm
Hi,
an alcoholic.
Bridget.
Hey, thank you for a great presentation. I want to ask you, it's a little bit off topic, but tell us about Jim Nelson.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll tell you how I met him. I was a bartender at I was a bartender at a really nice restaurant downtown, and Jim was an ad man. He worked in the advertising business. And on one end of, I was the daytime bartender at this nice restaurant. At one end of the bar had a lot of attorneys and judges, and they would drink their lunches. Sometimes their clients would come in and drink with them. And then I would have Jim sitting by himself, and I knew he was a member of AA. I was still drinking at the time, but not during the day when I was working, ever. I don't think. But I was protecting Jim from, you know, the Brad Folks of the world, you know, who were at the other end of the bar. And he really didn't need me to do that, but I knew he was in AA, 'cause he told me. And I knew my dad was in AA and that people in AA, you know, need to be protected. That's how I saw it at that point. It was about 2 years later that I walked into the Alkanon Club for a daytime meeting, and there he was. I was also in the advertising business and the television business that's what I went to college for, and that's what I worked in that field for a long time. So we had that in common. We also were just great friends. I don't know. He was wise. He was a caring and loving friend. I miss him. He taught me a lot. He taught me a lot, and I trusted him implicitly. So he was that guy. You know, he was a spiritual man, start to finish, I think. Oh, Kevin.
I'm just checking the time, that's all. Thanks again, Jennifer. This is terrific. I don't want us to get out too early. I don't want this to be known as the 40-minute meeting. But anyway, when you were talking about when you're doing a fifth step and when you were doing it with somebody, that in your fifth column you were talking about you named the character defect. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, did you have the person whose fifth step it was list those character defects so then they could go back at that
when we're not at that step, yep.
Right,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying is, in other words, that all that work that goes into not only four, but five also, that work continues on, and that's your master list versus...
Right.
Keeping your fourth step as far as, you know, so you can go back and look at that.
Yes.
So now, as a sponsee, they keep that list, and as a sponsor, do you keep a list of that too?
No, that's their list. That list belongs to them. It's their list. But when we get to, and we will, step six and seven, they have it. They know what, we're going to need that list. Coming up next
yes
week.
Exactly.
We're gonna need that list next week, so yeah, they keep their own list.
But you don't keep a list of of, like, you work with a number of women, you don't keep, like...
No. I don't keep paper on anybody. I mean, that's not... I just don't do that.
So you just keep it in your head, or...
It's their journey. I mean, it's their journey.
Yeah.
You know, they I'm hoping they're going to be as honest as they're able about their character defects. It's not for me to... I'm not like a Gestapo. I'm a guide. And so if they're ready to... They write down what they're ready to know. And if they're honest about it, as honest as they can be, then they'll be fine.
Okay. In my fifth column, I was told to take that defect and turn it into, you know, replace the defect with an asset, or, you know, a defect with a...
The opposite of the defect.
The opposite of the defect, correct.
Yeah, that's, yeah, we do that too. We talk about that too.
Because I was told as a moral inventory, not only that I did negative and things like that, but I also had some positives too that needed to be to work on, as well as my defect, you know, as far as my own character.
I had many more positives than I probably did, so I was pretty much one of those people that's that had that covered. She didn't need to like add on to my list of how wonderful I thought I was. It was.
How about people who come in there, that, you know, like a total victim, and they're just saying, "Well, what are your assets? Being a moral inventory, what are their assets?" And they say, "Oh, I'm happy.
Just totally awful, and I
yeah,
I, don't like
I
me
got
at all.
One
yeah.
one I'm
yeah I know something
breathing
like that." They do, yeah, they do need more. But it's not me telling them that they're wonderful. It's me letting them discover that they're wonderful by giving them opportunities.
Like putting breadcrumbs out for
Pretty
them
much.
To see it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Service, yeah, things like that.
Yeah, okay. I'm just kind of clarifying it so when other people listen to this also that, you know, it gets communicated that way.
Well,
also,
as much as we can be helpful, that's what we're doing.
I'm done.
Any other questions for Jennifer?
I am Deanna, an alcoholic.
I have one up here.
Okay.
Thanks.
Hi. No, it's not necessarily a question, because I've been sitting here racking my brain trying to think of the question to ask you, Jen. But you have a way of putting things so eloquently into words, and really all I have is just a comment. I'm grateful. You know, I'm grateful to have been here tonight to listen to your synopsis and your experience with the fourth and fifth step. Those are big ones, as we all know. And thank you. We and AA are just so fortunate and blessed to have you. So I love you, and I'm grateful to be a part.
I love you too, Dee. I'm so glad you're here.
Do we have one more quick one, Brenda?
Yeah, go quick.
Okay.
You're going to think this is a funny question.
Oh, okay.
Have any men asked you to sponsor them?
No.
Oh. And the reason I ask that is because in my husband's program, there's hardly any men. And he sponsors women.
Okay.
Okay, which I don't have a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
But I wondered, I know that sometimes looked upon as a problem, but I want to know what your theory was about that.
Oh, well, I've always had a woman sponsor. But I have had men as spiritual guides, and certainly men friends who have been spiritually inspiring to me. I've learned and from our friendships. My husband's in the program. We have certain boundaries when we came in. because we had no boundaries when we came in, so we had to like create some. We don't drive people of the opposite sex to meetings when they're new or young in the program. We, you know, we're careful about that, and unless we're together. If we're together, we'll take anybody anywhere. We had, you know, just certain agreements. He would not sponsor a woman. No woman would ask him, I don't think. Maybe they would. But no men have ever asked me to sponsor them, and I have never. When I first came in, I really stuck with, and Jim was there, so he remembers, I really stuck with, like, the old-timers, and most of them were men. But it was not because they were men. It was because they were old-timers, and I wanted what they had. I knew they had a wisdom that I didn't have. I was hoping to gain some of that. Thanks. Thanks, Brenda. Good question.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Have a good one.